Welcome to The Rink. I'm James Tapeleg Graylian. With me is my co-host Tom Luongo of NHL Fanhouse. Well, Gary Bettman unpacked a pickled Pekka this week. The Ducks aren't looking so good early on, and Chicago Blackhawks acknowledged their goaltending issues by firing their head coach. All of that, and we're going to talk with Bethany of Bethany's Hockey Rants. That's up next on The Rink.
So Denny Savard got fired by the Hawks, and it was funny. I was watching HNIC over the weekend, and on the hot stove, Al Strachan actually had the nerve to suggest that it was all kind of a coincidence that they had Quenneville on staff as a scout, and it was, you know, Denny Savard was never really in their long-term plans because it was part of the old Pulford dollar bill Wirtz era, and that's gone now, so now they can move on with a clean slate. And, oh, look, we just happen to have Joel Quenneville on staff. Why don't we hire him as the coach? And it was really funny that Mike Milbury just kind of called BS on all of that, and he was just lost it. And he was just like, no, I'm not, just not buying that one. It was really, really, really quite funny.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I agree with him. It's, you know, there's no way. There is no way that there were already the rumors in the off season that Savard's head was on the chopping block. Everybody felt that he wasn't long for this world. And if that was the case, then they should have done it in the off season. And it's almost a sad coincidence that they won their first game right that night. It was obviously going to happen. They announce his firing, what, 2 hours? They do it 2 hours, 3 hours after they win their first game. Obviously things were in the works. So, right. And really, you know, if you look at the Quenneville hiring, here's a guy who's a little bit down on his luck, or who is who just got released at the, you know, from the Avalanche and needs a job. It really didn't seem like a really bad fit, but you had to wonder if something else was going on.
I have to wonder why you'd bring a guy like Joel Quenneville. Nothing to disparage Joel Quenneville. He's an excellent hockey coach, but he's also an excellent hockey coach with a reputation of only wanting to really deal with veteran players. And the Hawks are anything but a veteran team. This is really, you know, a very much a young work in progress. And I would have thought they would want to go with, you know, a guy with a better reputation, or even a different reputation, even somebody possibly, you know, bringing him up from the minors or whatever, that's done really well in bringing up younger players. I mean, that's the part I find odd. And I mean, Quenneville's a big name, and he'll help sell the team and in that respect, and bring kind of classic hockey legitimacy. But I have to wonder if this was the right call with the current group of players that got.
Well, it's hard to say that it's a good, you know, it's hard to say, obviously, until it all fleshes out. But the weirdest thing for me is that you've got your kind of built-in goalie controversy, which I kind of want to stab myself when I say that. I just hate saying goalie controversy. But if there was a team that was defined by that right now, it would be the Chicago Blackhawks. They have two bona fide number one goalies who are both playing like 1B goalies at the best. Mm-hmm. And in comes Joel Quenneville. And if Avalanche fans would tell you that Quenneville was horrible at handling the goaltenders, it was like a goalie go-round in Denver. Whether the resurgence of Jose Theodore was earned, whether Peter Budaj, when he was on fire, how David Abisher was handled, and on down the line. So it's kind of funny that a guy that in Denver was kind of defined by how the goalies were handled is now stepping into essentially kind of a goalie hot stove.
Right.
And really, that's to me, where does the problem with the Blackhawks lie? To me, it lies within the goaltending and the money committed to big goaltenders.
Right.
Here's a team that decided finally in the preseason what to do with Nikolai Habibulin. It would have been so much better if they'd decided to do it earlier. That when teams had more money to spend, when maybe people were looking for number one goaltenders and all of these things, they spent more money on another high price goaltender in Cristobal Huey.
Right.
They keep Habibulin around and don't decide what to do with him. They keep Savard around, don't decide what to do with him until now. I'm kind of trying to figure out where the Blackhawks are coming from now. What is this all equating to?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that. I wonder
if anybody has a good answer for that.
I think the point that was brought up on the hot stove the other night was that they didn't want to fire Savard in the offseason and create. And it was a weak argument. They couldn't even really follow the logic that somehow it's better to fire him 4 games into the season than it would have been to just fire him in the offseason because, you know, oh, I know, because they had all of this good will happening during the offseason. They had signed Campbell and they got QA and they, you know, they were only a few points out of the playoffs and they were moving up. So you don't fire fan favorite Denny Savard during the offseason, and you wait until he's lost a couple of games and then you throw him by the wayside like he's yesterday's garbage.
Just a few games in, that's more acceptable. I don't understand that either.
Yeah, that's just not an argument that makes any sense to me whatsoever. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? He was successful at guiding Chicago to a good start, and that would have been okay too. I mean, I just don't see.
Well, I start to wonder who's running that team at this point. Now that you have Scotty Bowman involved in the team as, I believe it's a consultant, right. And you have, and I believe it's Bowman's son is an assistant GM for the team. I'm starting to wonder if there's something else going on beyond Savard, beyond his numbers as a coach. I hate to base things on pure speculation.
I can tell you that what they said on the hot stove the other night was that Bowman has absolutely no interest in doing anything more than what he's currently doing. That he's got apparently there's a family member who's sick. He's got a bunch of other commitments on his plate, and he has no I think it was Pierre LeBrun, so it wasn't Toad the Drunk Strachan, it was actually somebody who's credible, said, no, he had talked to Bowman that day, and there was really he had absolutely no interest in running the Chicago Blackhawks.
I don't believe he does either.
So I don't think that's the case. I think that they're trying to move in a completely different direction than what they had before Bill Wirtz died, and this is just the final portion of the house cleaning. And at the end of the day, Quenneville was available at the time. He was available to bring him into the team for whatever reason. And hey, it's a happy coincidence that they can move him up once they decided it was time to let Savard go.
There was nothing coincidental about that.
No, I know. Of course, there was nothing coincidental about that. What I'm saying is that they were going to make their decision. They had already planned out when they were going to make this happen. They made it happen, and then that's that. So
it's pretty piss poor timing.
Dale Talon's job is safe, and that's the end of it. So
I think you're right. Dave Talon's not going anywhere. But the woes of the Blackhawks, when you start looking at the salary numbers, and they have Hue on the books for so long, and they've got Campbell on the books for so long, and they decide to keep around Hobby Bullen as they have. I mean, they could have done things that they decided to wonder if they're going to keep both of the young talents that they have in Toews and Sharp.
Well, I think what will happen is this. Hobby Bullen is, if he's not, I think he's only signed for one or two.
I think this is his last year of his contract, yeah.
If it's his last year of his contract, then that'll be the end of it. They may even just buy him out at some point when it's reasonable during the season. Somebody's goaltender might get hurt. They may need, there's always the opportunity of moving Hobby Bullen off for a middle draft pick, getting the salary off the books, and then recouping some of the cap space so that they can actually then take on salary if this team looks like it's going to make some noise come April. And that's what they really have to deal with. Those are the things they have to deal with right now, is how to manage the cap, how to move Hobby Bullen out when they can for anything.
Well, if we're going to speak about teams that are kind of spiraling like Chicago is right now in their coaching situation, I guess we have to talk about the Ducks, who are looking pretty bad right now.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I really haven't had a chance to watch them at all. But let's look at the let's look at just some basic stuff here. Let's go look at team stats and see what's going on, and know that Rob Niedermeyer is your leading scorer, and Brad May has more points than either Corey Perry or Ryan Getzlaff.
That's painful. That is really, really painful. And these are two guys, Getzlaff and Perry, who are basically the youth movement of a couple of years ago for the Ducks. They're guys who were key to the Ducks winning a Stanley Cup. They're the future of the franchise. And at this point, neither one of them have scored a goal at all.
Right.
That's painful. That's not just bad. That is painful.
Right. And the issue in Anaheim is the lack of power play scoring. 4.2% on the power play just ain't cutting it. Their penalty killing doesn't look all that great either. You know, we're only talking 80% there. But again, it's six games. So they're 1-5. They're apparently playing just fine 5-on-5. Their team as collectively as a team, they're only a -6, but yet they've lost five games. Jaguar's numbers aren't awful. 3 goals against, 899 save percentage. It's not terrible. He's even got a shutout on the season. But he can't. But they're not. They're just not scoring enough goals. They have 13 goals in 6 games, and you can't win in this league if you're only scoring 2 goals a game. Can't do it.
No, not with teams out there like Minnesota who are going to absolutely shut it down. You have to.
Minnesota, Montreal, Buffalo, Rangers. You look around the league right now. There's 7 or 8 teams that have given up 2 goals or less per game through as many as 8 games. The Rangers have only given up 16 goals in 8 games. Mm-hmm. Buffalo's given up 8 goals in 5 games. That's a scary amount of number. That's a scary number of goals. None of these teams are going to keep this up forever and a day. A lot of these teams are really running strong on the penalty kill, and we all know that special teams go in cycles. So the Ducks are in a down portion of their cycle. They have to get their special teams running if they're going to get anywhere. But they've got to, you're talking 2 points at this point. That's them and Philly for most inept in the NHL right now, that's scary. So,
well, that's Gary Bettman's parody in full effect right there. Win the Stanley Cup and then start off the season this bad.
Well, they're 2 years removed from it, and Brian Burke has painted himself into a corner on a variety of issues. He should have, the Tamas Solani thing for this contract was fine at $2.5 million a year. Even if Solani doesn't score you a whole bunch of goals, if he's lost a step or whatever, he's got enough savvy that he can play an all around game and give you some number of goals in a third line.
He's got one, and that's more than Getzlaff or Perry.
Exactly, but it's the whole Scott Niedermeyer circus that I just don't have any. I have no understanding of. I mean, I understand there's loyalty to a player and needs is a first ballot Hall of Famer, bar none, and all of that stuff. At the end of the day, though, if you're waiving and or salary dumping quality players in order to keep Scott Niedermeyer, I don't see there comes a point where you have to make a tough choice. And we can talk about tough choices until we're blue in the face. And I would know nothing about tough choices being a fan of the Buffalo Sabres and what you in the tough choices you have to make when you're faced with players making a certain amount of money. And you're in a cap world, regardless of what your revenue stream is, you have to make those tough decisions. It looks to me like Brian Burke really didn't make, I think, all the decisions he should have made. But he gave the money to Getzlaff and Perry, and they haven't performed yet. They haven't taken that next step. We saw it last year in Buffalo. We started to give the some of those guys got their good restricted agent contracts, and they struggled under the pressure of it. Dustin Penner struggled last year under the weight of the offer sheet that he signed with Edmonton. I mean, it takes time. One of the dangers of giving a 23-year-old that kind of money is how he handles the pressure of it. And a lot of teams are beginning to find out that it's not just automatic, that they take that next step year in. They take that next step. Marek Svatos is going to go. Whoever winds up with Marek Svatos next year is going to wind up in the same boat, for example.
True, but you know, the problem with not giving him that kind of money is that he's going to go somewhere else, and he may turn it on when you absolutely need it, and right. be somewhere else when that happens. That's
right.
That's kind of the fear. Yeah, you know, I can understand that fear.
And from my perspective, all I'm saying is that if you're gonna pay those players to do that in that situation, and then you ask them to step up, it only makes sense that there may be a year where they're not capable of doing so. And you're going to struggle for that entire year. When you put the burden on the younger players to carry the burden of leadership and this and everything else, you may just get a complete train wreck for anywhere from, you know, 20 games, from 6 games to 20 games, maybe may take an entire season. It may take an entire season of losing before they really understand just how hard it is to win. Because guys like Getzlaff and Perry came into the league and it was easy for them.
Yeah,
Just like it was easy for Alex Tanguay when he came into the league. Just like it was easy for Thomas Vanek and Derek Roy and all those guys in Buffalo. It was easy for them when they came into the league. When they became the front guys, now it's a lot harder.
Yeah.
And
when things aren't rolling, when you're not winning every game, right. when you actually do have to step up to the plate.
When yeah. you're not getting centered by Joe Sakic, when you're not getting centered by Danny Briere or, you know, whatever. Yeah. Or when you don't have Briere and Drury taking all the pressure off of you, then you can just freewheel and skate against the third pair of defensemen. Yeah. That process, you know, there's no way to go through that except to lose.
Well, Ryan Holwig was suspended again by the NHL, again for checking from behind. I'm sure that you can imagine that Tom isn't too happy about that. And actually has a few ideas about things in Tom's 2 Minutes of Hate.
So Ryan Holwig was suspended again for a hit from behind. And this time it was automatic because of his suspension in the preseason for the very same thing. On Saturday's Coach's Corner, Don Cherry had something to say about this. And he had a solution to the Holwigs of this league. Namely, Chris Simon's two-handed whack to the chest, which earned him Villain of the Year status for 2007 and marked the ignominious end to a pretty solid career as a tough guy to the NHL. You know, bring back the code and do away with the instigator. But for the first time in a long time, I found myself wholeheartedly disagreeing with Grapes on this issue. Simon's act of violence has done nothing to stop Holwig from continuing to attempt to injure the opposition every time he steps on the ice. Grapes even went so far as to show us the evidence in rapid succession of Holweg's antics since the Simon incident. Guys like Holwig will not be deterred by the threat of violence any more than they'll be deterred by suspensions. They are the guys for whom the rulebook is irrelevant. Their survival in this league comes from doing the things they do. Any forfeiture of salary is minimal, as they know in their hearts that they should be making league maximum in the AHL, not league minimum in the NHL. So the question is, what needs to be done? And the simple answer of get rid of the instigator is just not enough. It's a good step, but it won't deal with the Holwigs or the tutus of this league. It will be a step forward towards not having the rulebook protect them during the game while slapping the wrists after it's over. Punishment models don't work. They only create anger and resentment while studiously not correcting the unacceptable behavior. Imbuing one man with the power to dispense justice is a flawed system. A lot is made by us in the blogs about how inept Colin Campbell is at his job. To me, he can't be anything but incompetent because he doesn't have the tools at his disposal to approach competence. The system is flawed, and any person doing it would fail. You see, individually, the teams have an incentive to put these guys on the payroll. There is no downside to bringing up an endless series of Oglethorpes to attempt to scare the opposition into giving them the game. Logically, then, if we want change, then the teams themselves should be the ones policing their players' actions. Now, while I don't have all the answers on how to solve this problem, and I would be no better than the men I'm indicting here if I said that I did, I can say that rejecting the league-administered system of hit, review, suspend, hit again is a good first step, along with the removal of the instigator. Replace it with a system where the aggrieved team files a complaint with the league, which the offending team must respond to, and let the two GMs negotiate a settlement. In effect, civil law versus criminal law. If no settlement is reached, then assign a mutually acceptable arbitrator to review both the case and the compensation packages offered and render a decision. Nothing, by the way, should be left off the table. Let the teams decide on how inappropriate the behavior was, and let the bar slide with the times and the tastes of both the teams and the fans. Imagine how much greater a deterrent for Pat Coletta or Jarkko Ruutu the price of not being able to play either Thomas Vanek or Daniel Alfredsson against your team for a couple of games would be. How many teams in this league right now could afford to absorb the cap hit of Joe Thornton for 2 months while he's out with a broken arm or concussion without having to waive someone of consequence? These are just some of the ideas that pop into my head when I start thinking about how this system could be implemented. In a sense, what I'm asking for is to take the code to the next level, involving the men that do the hiring and the marketing as much as the players themselves, and let them reap the whirlwind of what they've sown, so that as the violence gets ratcheted up, so should the consequences for their team. Ta.
Suspensions are big news in the NHL this week, with Michael Pekka getting his suspension reduced from 10 games to 5 games for abuse of an official. We wanted to talk to a Columbus Blue Jackets blogger about it, and we called up Bethany Porter of Bethany's Hockey Rants and find out what she thought. Gary Bettman apparently handed down the decision about Michael Pekka and cut his 5-game suspension sentence in half.
Endgame.
What do you know? What do you think?
You know, for what happened, I guess it's a good suspension. He touched the ref was all he did. He didn't shake him. He didn't do anything. He touched him. So I guess 5 games is good enough. You don't want your players touching the refs. So
yeah, he kind of touched him and had some. He had some good words for him too, from what it sounded like, from what Pekka's own admission was.
Yeah.
Perhaps maybe those two things together kind of compounded the situation.
Yeah. And, you know, so many things went into that. And I know why Pekka was upset and wanted to have the words, but it was a good suspension, I guess.
Well, you sound a little reluctant to actually admit that. Why don't you just give us your opinion about, you know, really what you think one way or the other. I mean, from what I understand, he said that Brendan Morrow slew-footed him and then wound up scoring the goal right after that, and that set him off. And if you could just...
Yeah, it was a 5-on-3, and Brendan Morrow slew-footed him. And Pekka has had tons of issues with his knees, so that obviously made Pekka mad. And then when he scored, obviously he was heated. So he went and he touched the ref and then had a few words, and then the ref sent him off. And it was honestly, if you saw the amateur video that was on YouTube, it was honestly maybe 5 seconds.
The only thing I actually saw was that overhead shot from way up high, and I couldn't really see much of anything. Was there did better video actually surface of this?
There was never a really good video. There was amateur video from a Stars fan who taped the goal and saw a little bit of what happened. And you can see Pekka touch the ref and then talk to him and literally walk away or skate away, I guess. Pekka is one of our better centers, especially on the penalty kill. And he and Manny Malholtra are both out right now.
Yeah, that's rough. Those are two of the better penalty killers in the league. And Malholtra is a guy I really like. I think he's a great hockey player.
When I was in Columbus during training camp, if anybody seemed like a real leader on the ice, it seemed like Michael Pekka. He was always describing, you know, what should be, you know, what was going to happen next, talking to the guys. He always seemed to really kind of relish in that leadership role.
Yeah, he really was. Last season when he was on the ice and playing with us, we were significantly, if I could talk, better. Just as a whole, we won more games. We played smarter. It's crazy to look at the stats. I don't have them in front of me. I guess I could find them, but
oh, that's okay.
We're a lot better when he's there.
Well, that does it this week for The Rink. Our special thanks go to Bethany from Bethany's Hockey Rants. You can find her site as part of the Kukla's Corner Network. Just go to www.kuklascorner.com and look under blogs for Bethany's Hockey Rants. Tom's work can be found at nhl.fanhouse.com, and you can find me at jerseysandhockeylove.com. The Rink is located at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can also subscribe on iTunes and also follow us along on Twitter. You can send us an email at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can call us, of course. Our number is 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. And thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.